Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Fell Into Food Podcast. I am your host, Chef Jeff Fell. Really excited today. With me is Chef Alicia Bell, Culinary Director of Food Service Innovation Team at the Humane Society. And she's going to give a lot of perspective today, especially on the plant-based sector. I know I brought it up in previous episodes, and other chefs have given their insights. This is what she does all day, and she is a wealth of knowledge. So welcome, Chef. So glad to have you on.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. I'm excited to talk all things plant-based.
So maybe before we jump into all the plant fun stuff, maybe give the 30,000 foot of who Chef Alicia is and how you kind of made your way, or maybe let's do the background and then kind of how you came to that affinity of where you're at with the Humane Society.
Absolutely. So I've been in the industry for going on 15 years now, and was classically trained, went through culinary school, did all that, the restaurant circuit as you normally do. And while I was working in a restaurant and hotel, I just kind of came to be where I was sitting there one day with myself going, what am I doing? I just make food for rich people. Like, I don't know. That's not feeding my soul in any way. So I wasn't totally sure kind of where to go next, and just continued to float on through the restaurant circuit. And as I was finishing up culinary school, I got a call from a friend of a friend, because the industry is about everyone you know. So it turns out they were opening up a senior living community up in LA. So I'm based out of San Diego, and this was opening up in Los Angeles. And healthcare was something that's never talked about in culinary school. Like, you don't learn about these other facets in the industry. You're just hammered home restaurants, 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 maybe hotels, of course. So healthcare was new and something I hadn't considered. I fell in love with it. Healthcare was something I immediately became so passionate about, really learning the transformative power of food. You're seeing these, you know, patients come in who weren't under the best health and didn't have proper adequate nutrition. Suddenly they're getting fed both their body, but I think their soul as well, food that they, you know, really connect with. They're coming to life again. So spent some time in senior living and then moved on to a healthcare system in San Diego and oversaw three different campuses. Again, just fell in love with the transformative power of food. And what's so incredible is actually my boss at the healthcare hospital system, he found the job listing for HSUS, believe it or not. And he was like, so you have to apply. And I was like, I'm sorry, are you trying to fire me right now? Like, am I losing my job? And he was like, absolutely not. I just know how passionate you are about this, and you gotta explore it. So,
that's amazing.
Yeah. Sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say, that's amazing that someone had that kind of respect of the, and that potentially mentorship to be like, hey, I want you to move on to better things and not hold you back. As you know, in a lot of restaurants or a lot of places, if you're high performing, they usually want to retain because they don't want, it's that lack of like, okay, well, if they're gone, then I've got to do the work or find someone or multiple people to do the job versus, man, there's an amazing opportunity and you have got to go chase it. So that was just really cool to hear that he really was behind that. So continue.
Absolutely. No. And I'm to this day, he's still a mentor to me and someone I deeply admire and respect for how I feel like leadership should be. So absolutely adore him. But what really led me to plant-based work was actually while I was still in culinary school and on my way into the senior living, my mom was diagnosed with breast cancer. And I love my mom because she is just such a badass. And she was like, absolutely not. Am I going to follow anything Western medicine is telling me? I'm going to go take this into my own hands and I'm going to do it all through diet nutrition. And I'm just going to radically change all of that. And I'll talk to you in a year, essentially. Which was very terrifying as her family, because we love her and need her around forever. But of course, she did it under all of her doctor's care and kept in touch and made sure everything was still going fine. But after 6 months, she went to a strictly plant-based diet, obviously making sure everything was healthy there. But they went in to go and look at the tumor, and the tumor was gone. She no wow. longer had breast cancer. And she was basically just given a list
that's
of
amazing.
Foods. Right. And they were like, here, eat this. But when you look at a laundry list of foods, it's overwhelming. You're like, well, how do I make this a meal? So I took it on to myself. I was like, oh, this is so fun. This is like a puzzle. I'll make the meals. You just have to eat them and get better. And it totally changed. And so watching that journey again, I know I talked about the transformative power of food, but seeing that and seeing plant-based, like that being her journey was so powerful. And I was like, I got to learn more about this.
So how many years ago was that?
So that was 9 years ago now.
Okay. So that was definitely, because I think this is going to lead into really almost the definition of plant-based eating, because it's so much more mainstream media now than it ever has. Mm-hmm. There's Netflix documentaries and it's all over the news and people talk about it. Maybe delve in, because 9 years ago, plant-based of what, when people hear plant-based, they instantly think Beyond Burger, Impossible Burger, alternative this, alternative that. Whereas realistically, the original plant-based eating was just eating non-animal protein. It was truly plant-based eating, not just alternatives. Yeah. So I think that leads to my question of maybe explain plant-based eating of what it really, I don't want to say what it really is, but maybe that is the question. And that definition of what it kind of was, and maybe that evolution of what it is now.
I definitely think that evolution is so evident, which is really, really exciting, especially for the space that I'm in. So I think, unfortunately, it had not a great stigma attached to it back then. And I mean, we're still fighting that to some extent today. I don't like how there's so much exclusivity attached to it or privilege. I know that can sometimes be a part of it, but I think because that world is expanding so much, hopefully we're becoming more inclusive. But yeah, back in the day, you would basically hear vegan food and think that you're eating twigs and branches. You know, like you're just not eating anything delicious. And like, how could one possibly sustain life on a plant-based diet? Turns out really well, really, really well. So, and to be fair, at least in my mom's situation, it was all whole food plant-based. So we're eating the rainbow, as many have heard. We're going to eat all the veg, all the different fruit. We're getting all the fiber and micronutrients we need, and still getting all of our protein through beans and legumes and those whole food resources. And that's kind of what it was. And I don't think, like you said, there was much out there. I mean, maybe the cookbook here or there, maybe some celebrity tried out a vegan diet for a week. You know what I mean? Like, that's what you're hearing.
Right.
And now today, like you mentioned, with all the different meat analogs and meat alternatives, it's so exciting. The options are truly endless. I think it's much more approachable. It's much more familiar. And I think that's a huge part when it comes to plant-based. Like, you have to keep it familiar. You have to keep it visually recognizable. And I think that can make a world of difference for people.
Yeah, for sure. So how does what your division does with the Humane Society, what role do you all play within the food service industry?
Absolutely. So our big goal is we emphasize a two-step approach. So goal setting and implementation. So we're going to work with these different institutions, whether it's an incredible food service management company or any self-op institution. And we're first going to just talk about, what are your goals? Do you want to increase plant-based offering? Are you trying to go really sustainable as well, and additionally decrease meat consumption? So we're going to do like a meat reduction goal. And we kind of first start there. And then we go into creating food service industry leaders, and we work with them to set up trainings and different goalposts throughout their pledged time with us. And all these resources are also offered at zero cost. It simply is the pledge and agreement from the account that these are the goals they want to reach. And we are here every step of the way. And that's what I love so much, because we get to get creative with these food industry leaders. and we can come up with recipes. We're going to do recipe and menu development. We might do a train the trainer. Obviously, we know everything is virtual these days, just like us right now. So we love a virtual training. You can capture a really large audience that way. And it's really about marketing and education as well. So we try and create a really holistic approach to work with everyone and still meet their needs. And we know everyone's different. So maybe they got a great marketing concept down and they just need a refresh on the recipes. Well, no problem. We're here for you. We'll come up with all of that.
Yeah. I can attest to the non-pressure type situation. It's, hey, there's a service here. What are the goals? Let's figure out how to get there versus just a beat down of, no, we've got to do this and you have to do that. It's more of, okay, we understand that things happen and there's timelines, but how do we help you? And again, that zero cost, again, anyone listening, like, take them up on it. They are not joking around. They will really help you set your goals to help your food service establishment as small as you want or as large as you want to take it. They really are there to help. And to be honest, you're going to learn a lot of things that you normally don't. Again, just like you, I went to traditional culinary school and they don't, I mean, I took a healthy class, but it was really just about minimizing the amount of oil you used, your sodium intake, those kind of things. It really wasn't about how do you do other healthy choices. It was just, here are the healthy type foods out there, but we're still going to do everything the same. So what would you say are some of the biggest challenges working with these chefs and these institutions when they are trying to transition towards more plant-based options?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. I think some of the challenges, we know people are still recovering from the pandemic, right? We're still trying to get our labor force where it needs to be. We're still trying to get supply chain where it needs to be. We know inflation is a very real and present problem. So all of those taken in consideration, obviously we have unfortunately, no control over those things, but we do take them into consideration when we are coming up with these different plans and glide paths for our companies and institutions. So, okay, if we are down on labor, how can we make simplified recipes that are still high value, high impact? How can we look at what you're serving on your service line right now? How can we cross-utilize? How can we menu engineer to make this work for you? It always helps when you have leadership who is passionate about making these changes. I think without that leadership in place in one of those roles, whether it's executive chef, sustainability director, CEO, whomever, that makes a world of difference. But if you have that leadership, that trickles down, right? Your staff feels that. If they know that's a pillar in your work, then it's not going to come as a surprise. So staff buy-in is also huge and making sure that they're involved in the process instead of just like marching orders. I think that's probably across the board something really beneficial, and making sure that, yeah, be a part of the recipe testing and tasting. Let's talk about how we're going to market this to our consumer. What are those talking points we're going to have? What do you like about the dish? What are you excited about? You got to get them involved as well.
Yeah, you need flavors to really enhance and do. And there's so many things out there to be able to do that. And naturally, just plant-based foods. And again, now you do have the little flexibility of those analogs to be able to help supplement. Mm-hmm. Or somebody that's like, you know what, I can't just take beef completely off my menu and just substitute it with lentils because I'll have a riot. We can use some of those analogs, but it's not just, we only work with this one. It's whatever you perceive to be the best based off of purchase value or product you like. You all are willing to take said product and or recommend, for that matter. Here are some alternatives. Okay, if you don't want to do, you know, a full-on meatloaf, we can go the route of, you know, let's do a 70-30 with a mushroom mix. Or here's an analog that we can use in place of it on once a month, twice a month, whatever it might be, or a certain amount of dishes that really, once you start adding flavors and other things, you can't really tell, to be completely honest. I know a dish that I've done in the past was like a Beyond product, al pastor. There's so many different pieces to that recipe that you're not even going to really notice. And whatever analog you use, it's going to take on those flavors, especially if you develop them. So it doesn't really matter that I'm using an analog. It's just, what are those goals? So then when you talk about, you know, helping these chefs, you mentioned you do like some, you know, virtual stuff. What does it look like when you're at a physical site? like, maybe walk through that process, because that's always kind of fascinating to hear.
That's where the magic happens. We so missed being able to be in person with our teams, and we're so happy we're finally back to that now, being able to travel and go in person. It just is another layer when you finally get to meet someone in person and connect that way. So when we are in person, obviously one of the best parts is we get to taste the food, which is my favorite. We still lead the training in the same fashion, where we'll do a bit of education in the beginning, but then it's just time for the chefs to play. Because as you know, in your world, when's the last time you just got to like have fun and get creative in the kitchen? It doesn't happen that often. We're stuck in meetings and all these other important things that we have to do. So giving these chefs, anywhere from 4 to 6 hours to get to create these recipes. And a lot of them are the recipes that we've created as our culinary team here on the Food Service Innovation Team. But sometimes they're also new recipes that the account has wanted to test out or innovate. Mm. Sometimes we'll just do like an innovation session where, hey, we need to create new plant-based recipes. We want them to be like, we need them to be coming from our institution. That's totally fine. What can we come up with? And we'll give some guidelines of what ingredients to have on hand and kind of some places to start. And again, like you mentioned, it's completely up to each institution to decide. We want to do whole food plant-based. We want to do an analog. We want to do a mix of the two. It completely depends on whatever your goals and standards are. All is welcome. All journeys are welcome here. So we'll spend that time in the kitchen.
No, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. We'll spend that time in the kitchen and we'll just get to play with those ingredients, play with the recipes. We'll do some demos. We'll stop kind of in the middle and we'll do one of our favorites, which is like a nacho cheese sauce made from potatoes and carrots. I know that sounds crazy to some people. It's delicious and a very low food cost item, which is great. You probably have everything you need in your kitchen already. And then the best part, we put on a full-on buffet. And we always like when, if students are present, if your clients are present, your customers are present, they can come and do a tasting and be a part of that with us. And we'll do a debrief with the team and hear how it went for them. And my favorite part, I remember, we did a training in Wyoming. And we went to the University of Wyoming, where their mascot is a cowboy. And I was like, I have no idea how this day is going to go. And before we start, I had three women just like daggers were coming my way. And they were like, absolutely not will I be eating this food. And I was like, this is going to be a great day. Okay, let's do it. By the end, they were giving me hugs and telling them how much they loved it. And they couldn't go home and make it for their family. It was incredible.
Yeah, you have to have an open mind. I think as, you know, chefs in the industry, usually we have more of an open mind. Again, I know I had to open mine coming from small, tiny town USA to what the world really is. But the everyday person may not be, right? So for those that are curious about plant-based eating cuisine that do feel intimidated, what are some of those tips that you can offer the everyday person? You know, obviously there's a lot that's done on the corporate side and the companies, but for the everyday person, because I think once there's more mass adoption into some of these things, techniques, recipes, et cetera, then it becomes the norm, because that then trickles down, right? It starts with the parents going to the kids, right? So when the kids feel like that's what, then there's the push to the institutionalized side. So back to that question, what are some tips you can offer that home person to incorporate more plant-based meals into their repertoire?
We love incremental change, small steps to start with. So even if it's, you know, we're going to replace our standard chorizo that's in our burrito today with a lentil that we're going to make, incredible. Start there. Just see where you like it. And if you like the texture, figure out what your favorite beans and legumes are. Make it exciting and make it really, really fun. And it's totally okay if you don't like it. And the other thing is, like, it doesn't have to be 100% plant-based the first time. Just start with the protein, and then maybe we're going to move in and try some of those really fun plant-based cheeses that are out there, or different types of non-dairy milks. I think that's probably been maybe the easiest for people, especially in like the coffee shops. So many people have lactose intolerance, right? And different aversions to that. So no problem getting an almond milk latte, a soy milk latte, things like that. But interesting, when it comes to center of the plate, people might have a different opinion. But yeah, try one meal 1 week, even if it's maybe takeout from a local place that you really, really like, and they happen to have a vegan item on the menu, that could be really fun. You know the flavors, you're familiar with how they make their food. Give it a go. I know it can be scary to kind of take that gamble for some people, but that's how you get to learn more foods that you might actually enjoy and like that you never thought about before.
Yeah, I like what you said about the takeout. I know in this area, and I think they're nationwide, but Sweetgreens does a phenomenal job with a lot of more plant-based. Obviously, there's proteins that can be added, but it's just one or two. It's usually salmon or chicken, I believe. But they do a great job of combining flavors. My favorite personally is it's like a hot honey chicken bowl. It's like sweet potatoes, kale, a hot honey mustard. It's got toasted almonds. Everything just works. It's crunchy. Yeah. It's sweet. It's got a little heat to it. But for those listening, that's a great place to start, is finding someone like a Sweetgreens. Kava, I think, is something similar as well. They're trying to introduce this, but you don't have to make the commitment and be like, all right, well, I got to go to the grocery store and I'm going to buy all these beans and other legumes and other stuff to try and figure it out. Somebody's already kind of figured it out. Go try that first and then be like, oh, let me reverse engineer that, or let me recreate that, or try and figure out how they did it and do some basic techniques. And then you can incorporate that into your dining. So for the regular cook at home, what are some easy, quick swaps? I know you mentioned lentils for chorizo, but what are some other easy ones that people today, right? They're not going to have to go out and get crazy, but they probably have. What are some easy swaps for folks?
Yeah, I mean, everyone probably has a can of beans sitting in the cupboard at this point, right? And so whether that's going to be, I mean, I know it's so simple, but it's so soul satisfying. Just doing like a brothy bean on toast. Oh my gosh, it is so good every single time to me. You just do like a really rich umami, like mushroom based broth, and you're going to put some yummy beans on top. But what's fun with beans too, I feel like, I mean, you don't have to bust out a lot of equipment, but if you have a food processor, or you can honestly do it by hand and just take a little bit longer, go ahead and mash it up, throw some aromatics in there with, you know, garlic, onion, whatever you may have, and make some patties, make some meatballs out of it. You probably have a jar of tomato sauce, right? So it's so fun to just make those really easy swaps, and you don't need to have anything fancy in your house at all to make that happen. I will say the lentils are always on hand in my house. I make a big batch every single Sunday, and I usually do some kind of Latin flavor to them. But I also love like za'atar and some really yummy flavors like that as well. And that becomes a hash, that becomes, you know, thrown it on top of a salad, things like that. And just making sure, like you said earlier, it's taste and texture. That's what we're looking for. We want it to be a satisfying mouthfeel, and we want it to have those recognizable flavors. You hit those two marks, you're going to like it.
Yeah, if it tastes good and looks good, you're going to eat it. Where do folks find more inspiration, though? Like, let's say they wanted to be a little more adventurous. Obviously, we talked about some of the takeout places, but if they really wanted to dig in and be like, you know what, I really want to learn more about just plant-based in general, are there good websites for people to visit or books that they should get that just kind of will help them steer them down that path?
Well, shameless plug, I'm going to say, if you go to our website, forwardfood.org, we have a massive recipe database there, which is so fun, really great. We have everything from breakfast to dessert, anything you could be looking for. But I mean, social media is such a fun place nowadays, and you can find so many beautiful photos on there and so many great places. I know there are, I want to get the right name down. I don't know if it's just called The Vegan Butcher, but have you seen his cookbook before?
No, I haven't.
I believe his name is Zach. I have to look. It's just such a fun book. Yeah, I think it's just called The Vegan Butcher. So he does like incredible, like you're going to make your own seitan. I mean, we're going really deep into it. You know, you can get as creative as you want. But so he's doing his own seitan and doing like a carving station. How fun is that? Like you're going to walk into your local institution or university and you're going to expect like some kind of piece of meat, but no, you're having this really incredible seitan or tofu or tempeh or whatever it may be, but setting it up like a carving station, I think is so fun. So you can really get as creative as you like, but I would definitely start there. And also you know, your standard New York Times, Bon Appetit, everything like that, they're having like a very large representation of plant-based foods now. Not to forget that also so many cultures just are innately plant-based and have right. those recipes that just don't contain animal product. I also encourage that because it's so fun to try different foods and you can learn more about different cultures, and what a great way to do it through great flavors and everything like that. So that's also really fun.
Yeah, there was a documentary I saw. I don't know if it was Netflix or what platform it was on, but there's a chef, I think in New York, who has a Michelin-starred vegan restaurant. I think it's vegan, or at least plant-based. And he took a big gamble because everyone's like, you're nuts, you're crazy, why would you even think about it? But he's like elevating it to this level. And he goes, you know what? The regular stuff is great, don't get me wrong. But he's like, I want to do something that isn't being done. And he's taking it to another level. I'll find it and I'll throw it in the show notes when I do, because it is a phenomenal watch. And when you see some of the pictures, you're just like, oh my God, I don't care what that's made out of. I want to eat it because I am sure it tastes like $1 million. So I would be remiss if I didn't talk, because you guys have an environmental kind of piece and some benefits and some resources that I found really, really cool when I was seeing it. Maybe talk just briefly about what that is. And I think he's a doctor, right? Or he's at got his PhD. Maybe talk just briefly about that, because that was really fascinating when I learned about that.
Yes. So I will make it brief, because he is infinitely smarter than I ever will be on this topic, but he's so wonderful. And he also makes it so approachable. He's just a phenomenal human. So Dr. Isaac Emery is someone we partner with, and we're so thankful for that. So he's able to sit down and we can go as full scope or as small as you want with your institution, but he will take a look at the menus and look at the carbon emissions of each item. Which is really fascinating. I think it's something that's also getting a little more traction in the media these days. You're seeing climate-friendly foods or eco-friendly foods. Some people are even putting the carbon emissions on their menus now to see if it'll influence choice. And sometimes it's proven that it definitely does. So, for example, you take your animal-based dish and then you take a plant-based version of it. We talked about making meatballs and patties earlier. So a standard burger versus a plant-based burger, and the carbon emission difference of both of those. And it is rather staggering, I have to say. You see such a significant decrease when you look at the plant-based option. So getting to work with him and have him do just this entire workup on your menu, especially since sustainability is such a huge initiative for people now and for these huge companies, like, they want to be able to be in good standing, whether it's from, it being an initiative from the top down or just to get sometimes funding or grants or whatever it may be. You have to hit these certain marks and these metrics. So he's able to do that with you. And the way he explains it is so approachable and so wonderful. He also shared a very good YouTube video. If I can find it, I'm happy to send that to you as well, because it breaks it down for the layperson. Like me, who doesn't understand how this stuff all works, and starting from growing the food for the animals and then the animals that are then used for food versus going in the other direction, going plant-based. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, I think I do personally think you're seeing it more and more, especially on the college section or sector. Yes. They are, it's just becoming almost natural. They were the first that you had to label calorie counts and other type things. And I think they're going to be the leading indicator of, now it's turning into the carbon emissions, and it's just literally a calorie count and a carbon emissions, because people are just more cognizant of that and they want to see it. So I do think probably over the next 5-ish years, 10-ish, you're going to really see a ramp up, and even potentially in the grocery stores, especially at like the butcher areas or things like that, of, hey, here's what this carbon emission of this product is versus this. I do think that that's going to be kind of out there and up and coming. And as we kind of look forward into the future, what are some exciting trends or developments that you're seeing now and what's coming in this space?
Well, it's just so exciting to see how things have elevated, right? We're so used to the black bean burgers and the Morningstars and Gardein's, and those are solid brands. They never let you down, let me tell you. But just seeing now, one we were just talking about recently on a call was Meaty, that brand, where they're making those like chicken and steaks, those fillets. It is crazy, like how real they look, to the point where I was so suspicious to wonder what someone had just put in front of me. But just the technology behind it, the way that they're able to perfect the texture and taste, like we've talked about, and really delving into that world of things, or even, and I know nothing about it, but like 3D printing of meat, like that blows my mind. I know it's already happening in the UK. Have you seen videos on that?
Yes, that was in my in the weeds question. So it's actually really funny that you brought that up, because I was going to ask it. Yeah, cellular agriculture, if you think it's sci-fi or if it's realistically going to stay around.
I have no idea. I thought I read something that said someone, a state has already voted on the cultivated meat and they're like not going to allow it in their school system. I don't know if that's in the U.S. or not. But I mean, it's just so fascinating. That is something that's a goal of mine this year, to really delve into and learn and understand more about it. I just don't know enough, but I think it's fascinating. I love to see the creativity. You know, I love to see how far people can push things and what can be new and innovative. I think just like with any portion of our food and any kind of menu development, we always have to stay up on trends, whether that's flavors, mm-hmm. whether that's products, whatever it is. So I always like to know what's going on.
Yeah, and meaty, they're mushroom-based, correct?
They are, but they have so much protein in them also. They're actually almost like a good one-for-one swap, like chicken breast to chicken breast, or to meaty.
Are they using pea protein? Are they using brown chickpeas. Rice flour isolate? Chickpeas?
Yeah.
Another interesting one that I've been introduced to have recently, do you know of Sacha Inchi? Have you heard of that?
No. What's that one?
So Sacha Inchi is a seed that is from, I believe, in the Central America region around Peru. And only reason I know about it is because of a smoothie company. And I can send you more info and tell you about it, you know, off air. But basically, it's a complete protein, just like quinoa, but it's a seed. And it's not in the seed fashion of, it's not a tree nut, so there's no allergen. Mm-hmm. And you can grind that up. Oh, and it is huge. Just it's packed with protein. The kicker is it doesn't give you that weird off taste that sometimes pea protein can give, depending on how they process the chickpea. Yeah. It doesn't give you that. It's incredible the mouthfeel that it has. So I would be on the lookout for that one in particular. Wow. Another one I wanted to touch based upon, because I'm seeing it more, and I don't know if you have, is nutritional yeast.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, nutritional yeast has been around for so long. Actually, we use it in our cheese sauce that I was mentioning earlier. And it's so cool because it's a byproduct of making molasses. Fun little fact, if anyone didn't know. And it just is such a great way to create depth of flavor quickly, too. So if you're really missing that like umami type of taste into something, that can be really, really fun. I kind of hear everyone always say, oh, I love to put it on my popcorn because it can have that cheesy somewhat taste to it. Mm-hmm. But great in broths and soups, again, to get a really good depth of flavor. And good in like a breading. If you ever wanted to like bread some tofu or something like that, it's also just a really great additive there.
Yeah, and they're using, I don't know if it's nutritional yeast, but it's a yeast of some sort that they're using to make non-beef beef broth, non-chicken chicken broth. So it's super cool to see them developing the flavors like a roux and going down. It's becoming more, I've seen now two companies doing it, and I'm like, okay, I think this has got some legs. And from a flavor profile, you wouldn't be like, oh, that's beef versus that's plant-based. Right. Because it's such a development of flavor and the label is so clean. So I think that could potentially be another one up and coming. I'm really just excited to go to NRA and see what people are coming out with. There's such a refinement to your point of what was and what is now and how they're cleaning it up and really getting it streamlined and just solid. So I think NRA this year will be a good indicator of kind of where things are going in the space.
I agree. We'll be there too. So we'll have to compare notes after.
For sure. So let's jump into the weeds. You already answered one on the cellular agriculture, but chickpeas or lentils?
Personal preference, I love a lentil. I know I've already mentioned it like four times, but it's great because they are different textures, especially because there are different types of lentils, right? So we have More of the brown lentil where it's much softer. It'll break down easier. It get really velvety. So great for pureeing if you're looking to do something with that application. Where the chickpea will always kind of have a bite to it. So I feel like it depends on what you're looking for and what you're trying to create. If you want something to be a little smoother and velvety, I'd go with a lentil. But if you want it to always kind of retain that chew, then I love going with the chickpea as well. Not that it doesn't make beautiful, smooth hummus, but if you're just going to kind of like mash it or crush it a bit, it's still going to have a good texture to it.
It also makes delicious cheese puffs from the company Hit Peas. Those are phenomenal. Yes. So yes, if you're looking to replace your Cheeto addiction and trying to go a little better, look up Hit Peas, HIPPEAS. They've got ranch and cheese and you name it. Phenomenal. Yes. And the crunch on them is like any other, but it's like a puff. So check them out. Next one. Is tofu dead?
Poor tofu. Man, in this line of work, we have learned that tofu is the most polarizing topic you could ever bring up, more so than anything else we've already discussed. But man, have I learned that some people just hate it and some people love it. I do feel one of my biggest gripes with tofu is when people just don't marinate or season it properly. We just like anything else, you need to treat it with the respect it deserves. But the other problem with tofu, so when you see it in a hotel pan, on a hotline, wherever, and it's cubed up, immediately you're like, that's tofu. That's not like something I'm familiar with. That is 100% not an animal that I'm looking at right now, right? Whereas when you see, like, let's say orange chicken, it's immediately visually recognizable. So my favorite thing to do, and everyone needs to start doing this with their tofu, stop cubing it and start tearing it up with your hands. So it looks more organic and has like a much better visual appeal to it. So then you get those like craggly bits where the sauce can really cling on and get nice and caramelized and a little crunchy, but you still get this tender inside. And when you plate it, it looks so much nicer. And your eyes are immediately like, ooh, what's that? That just looks delicious. I'm not immediately thinking that that's a perfect cube and looks like something I don't know what it is.
Oh, I love that. I love the little tidbits for folks. Last one I've got. What is your favorite plant-based indulgence?
Oh, okay. I need to get the name down, but it's like that pudding brand that basically tastes like ganache. It's like devil something. That's terrible. I should know the name. Oh man, we're going to have to look it up, but it is a completely plant-based, they call it a pudding, but honestly, it just tastes like chocolate ganache and it is pure heaven. When you have
heard of it. So you're going to have to definitely send that. We'll put that in the show notes too. And I just got to kind of give you mine, which is Eclipse ice cream. So if you have any sort of like dairy, you know, issues, you know, my little guy for the longest time, dairy, Eclipse is the stuff they're doing. Mind-blowing. I don't know how they're not. I know they're a West Coast company. I don't know how they're not nationwide yet. And they're big in food service, but their stuff, and it's plant-based. It's not like an almond-based it's plant-based. And so the the flavors, they're caramel praline. Oh, it is out of this world. And you just eat it and you would be like, this is not plant-based ice cream or fake ice. It just tastes so good. So if you get a chance, folks, find some Eclipse ice cream. You might be able to find it online, or I don't know. It's probably pocketed around the country, but I know they're really attacking food service market.
I looked it up.
Before it's Bond Devil?
Yes.
Okay. All right. We'll put that in the show notes too, because I've got to see that and try that. And maybe they'll be NRA. Maybe not. We'll see. Yeah. Get a try there. I know you mentioned the website once, but maybe reiterate it for the folks or where else they can go to find you or contact you all.
Forwardfood.org is where you'll find all of our recipes. And also our contact info is on there as well. You can also see all the incredible institutions who have signed our pledge. If you want to take a further deep dive into that, as well as what's a really cool resource, we have free on-demand videos on how to work with almost every ingredient we just talked about, everything from tofu to lentils to tempeh, and even making full recipes. You can do step-by-step with Chef Muhammad on those videos as well.
Awesome. Anything else for the listeners, Alicia?
try tofu. Give tofu a chance. I swear it's good.
I absolutely love it. And I gotta still give my signature outro, even though it's an animal product, because until next time, we'll catch you on the sunny side. HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.